This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
Here we go. You ready? You ready to get on the roller coaster of Lori Vallow Daybell?
I don't know if I'm tall enough to ride this ride, Tony.
Oh, everyone's tall enough to ride this ride. We just threw the stick out that you had to be tall enough to.
And it I hated that stick.
It's gone.
I used to hate that stick.
Do you there's got to be sticks you still don't pass.
There are. I'm 4'9". And yes, anytime I go to an amusement park, I see the attendant like, they've got the stick and they're looking like, well, she looks a little older. She doesn't look like a kid, but she still doesn't. She's not over 5 feet. I can tell. And they come at, or they'll just kind of walk by. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to put it up to me, but they walk by just to kind of do that little measurement, like just to cover their ass.
Yeah.
Just enough.
Has anyone ever done the stick to you as an adult to make sure that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I get like it's more for safety. Yeah. It's not just. Yeah. I always thought it was like age discrimination when I was little because.
Right. Same. Yeah. I thought it was just because they didn't like short people. You know, the whole Randy Newman song, you know, that whole thing. But no, it's a real safety issue. Yeah. There's a ride in the Wisconsin Dells, which is a huge amusement park area in Wisconsin, water park, really. But it was a roller coaster that I had gone on, and I probably shouldn't have been on it because I felt myself slipping.
Yeah.
Like I was like lifting up out of the seat and like the things that come down and lock were not locking well enough to stop me. So I was like hanging on for dear life. Like, holy crap, I'm going to fly out of this unless I hold on.
Yeah.
It was bad.
And it would have been a true crime case after that.
It would have.
Was it the wooden ones over at Olympus?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like roller coasters, but I did like those. At least I liked them about 25 years ago. That was the last time.
No,
I was there.
Yeah. Sick to my stomach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got Lori Vallow to dive into. We're going to break this whole thing down. We're going to actually watch the prosecution, and then we're going to watch the defense, which is Lori Vallow herself. You know? Being her own attorney. And so here we go, kids. We'll be here for some commentary on the corner. And let's just dive right into what's going on in the courtroom today. You can hear all of it right now. Here we go. Judge is about to speak, and the prosecution is about to, I believe.
I need you to stay close to me the next couple days. Mel, too. She can't go to Utah. They're planking some kind of intervention, but want Mel out of the way, so I'm left alone. I need to come get the stuff at your house tomorrow and secure it. Lots to do. Thanks for standing by me. It's all coming to a head this week. I will be like Nephi, I am told, and so will you. Lori Daybell, the woman seated over here, wrote this to her brother, Alex Cox, on July 9th of 2019, 2 days before they killed Charles Vallow. But to understand why this is so meaningful, why this is relevant, you have to understand the context. So let's talk about it. In July of 2019, Lori Vallow was married to Charles Vallow. Lori Vallow lived here in Arizona, Chandler. Charles Vallow lived in Texas. In July of 2019, Lori Daybell was Lori Vallow, married to Charles Vallow. In July of 2019, Lori Vallow wanted to be Lori Daybell, wife of Chad Daybell. And in July of 2019, Lori Vallow wanted to keep the same lifestyle that she had with Charles. And she could get all of this if Charles was dead. She could marry Chad Daybell and become Lori Daybell. She would get $1 million life insurance policy from Charles Vallow. She would get Social Security for herself and their son, JJ, as a child of a dead spouse. And all of this would be true if Charles Vallow was dead. So what about Nephi? Well, Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, and Alex Cox all believed that those who disagreed with them were dark, possessed by evil spirits, sometimes called Z's or zombies. Sometimes they had names for these evil spirits, like Ned. Lori, Chad, and Alex.
Ned Ryerson.
Jesus Christ.
Ned?
Saints.
Is that you?
Nephi, a prophet, who was directed by the Holy Spirit to kill Laban.
Sounds legit.
And secure the long-term prosperity of Nephi's descendants. Lori used this religion and the story of Nephi as justification to kill Charles Vallow, just like Nephi killed Laban. On July 9th of 2019, Lori Vallow invoked Nephi when she messaged Alex to provide them with that religious authority to kill Charles. After months of trying to get rid of him, they were finally ready to be like Nephi.
The jury's gonna be like, so what the fuck did I just get myself into?
Right? 2018,
Lori Vallow met Chad Daybell. You will learn that in November of 2018, that Chad Daybell came to Arizona for a Preparing the People conference. And he and others stayed at Lori and Chad's house. Charles was actually out of town with JJ. Lori and Chad acted as if there was nothing between them, but nothing could be further from the truth. By January of 2019, Lori Vallow claimed that Charles Vallow was possessed by an evil spirit that she called Ned. You will see text messages where Lori and Alex refer to him as Ned. During this trial, you're going to hear from some women who initially were close in Lori's circle. These women will tell you they met her through the Preparing the People conference. They are spiritual women within the LDS church. And initially, they found Lori's spirituality infectious.
And also batshit.
But yeah, there's that.
The more they listened to Lori, the more they started to find concern with what she was saying. One of them called it red flags.
Lori, I got red flags for you. Like
she didn't need to repent, that she was beyond that. And you'll hear from these women that that goes against everything that their religion follows. Everyone must repent. You will hear from Serena Sharp that in March of 2019, she attended a girls' weekend with Lori and some other women. They went to the temple, they had lunch,
they
did volunteer activities. And then Lori asked them to do something a little unusual.
God, here we go.
She told them that her husband was possessed by an evil spirit, and she referred to that as Ned. She told them that Charles was no longer in his body. She asked them to come together and try to cast out this evil spirit. Serena will tell you that she didn't ask Lori what would happen to Charles.
How do you just ask somebody to do that at lunch?
And how dumb are you where you're going, okay, yeah, let's go do that.
Yeah, we could do that.
No, if he would come back or his body would just die. Later that month, on March 26th of 2019, Alex Cox texted his sister, Lori Vallow, and said, quote, Ned is still alive, just confirmed.
Damn it, Ned.
Lori responded, it's not Ned. It's a new one.
Oh.
Ned is gone.
Ooh.
No one has seen him, right? Just talk to him, question mark. Alex said, correct. Charles' body is alive.
Jesus.
What did you learn? Question mark. And Lori responded, a lot. Still working on it. We'll call you later.
I don't think there's been a Lori movie yet.
Year went by, Lori and Alex
became
more determined to get rid of Charles Vallow's body, whatever they wanted to call him. You will hear from Christina Atwood that she attended a gathering on June 9th of 2019. Again with Lori and some close friends, but this time Alex Cox attended. This was the first time she had met him. Christina will tell you that she heard Alex say that he just wanted to kill Charles. In fact, she heard him say this a couple times. And she heard Lori say, in response, that she had been drugging Charles, crushing up JJ's pills and putting them in Charles's protein drinks.
Like you do.
Christina will tell you she was so disturbed by this that she actually went and confronted Lori the next day and told her that if Charles ended up dead, she would have to go to the police. That's how disturbed she was. Now, Lori, of course, said it was all a joke. What else did you say?
It's a joke. Have some pills.
One month later.
Drinky, drinky.
Alex and Lori created that situation to be like Nephi.
Oh, my God.
And killed Charles. What about Charles? You're going to learn that Charles and Lori had been together for a long time.
Been
they had adopted
together.
Eternity. One of Charles's family members' children, JJ. JJ was everything to Charles. JJ was the reason Charles and Lori were still together. You'll learn that Charles knew about Lori's beliefs, that he was called Nick or Ned or some name. You'll learn that Charles told a lot of people about this. And on February 26th of 2019, Charles made a big decision. He had a $1 million life insurance policy, and his wife, Lori Vallow, had been the beneficiary. He changed it. He changed it to his sister, Kay Woodcock. You will learn he did not have to notify Lori about it.
Good for him.
Right?
You'll learn that Charles desperately wanted to bring Lori back to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You will learn that he was close with Lori's brother, Adam, and he was reaching out to him during this time period. You will hear from Adam. Adam will tell you that he himself had heard the defendant say things that were outside the LDS religion, that she was translated, Charles was possessed. He knew she was no longer following the LDS faith. Then, June 28th, Charles found out that Lori and Chad were having an affair.
Dun, dun, dun.
You will hear that he reached out to Lori about it, Chad's wife, and out to Adam Cox about it. Now, you're going to hear about a lot of these things because the police executed numerous search warrants. You're going to hear that they executed search warrants on cell phone records, cell tower records, and iCloud accounts. You're going to learn that an iCloud account is basically a service through Apple where you can store everything, photos, emails, documents, whatever you want. This can be intentional, or sometimes it can be unintentional. Your phone or your computer may be saving items there without you even realizing it. You'll learn that for years, Lori Vallow had an iCloud account that was loriforstyle@icloud.com. But after Charles learned about Chad Daybell on that June 28th, she created a new iCloud account, lollytime@icloud.com. Many of these text messages between Lori and others that you're going to hear about at trial were recovered from those two iCloud accounts. You're also going to learn about Charles's cell phone. The police eventually recovered it, and they were able to extract the data, look at the messages and things that had been in there. And you're going to learn about those text messages with Adam Cox from July 9th through the 11th. You're going to hear from Adam that they were talking about an intervention, about maybe recording Lori, saying these things and taking those recordings to the state president, or just confronting the state president about it. They didn't have an exact plan. But on July 9th, Adam agreed to fly to Phoenix to help try to talk to his sister, talk to the state president, get her back into this faith. Ultimately, Adam flew to Phoenix on the 10th, as did Charles. Adam will tell you that he actually, when he got his reservation on the 9th from Charles, reached out to his brother, Alex. He asked to stay with him. And Alex said, sure. You'll see phone records. They had a conversation about it. But when Adam flew into Phoenix on the 10th, remember, that's after that message by Lori that he needed to stay close to her. Adam tried texting his brother. Adam tried calling his brother. And Alex didn't respond. Adam didn't know that his brother Alex had been summoned to help his sister Lori be like Nephi, that it was time to kill Charles. The text messages from Lori to Alex about that intervention that she knew about and being like Nephi show that by the evening of July 9th of 2019, Lori knew that Charles was trying to have an intervention. An intervention. In that text message, remember, she said, they are trying to have an intervention. She knew it was Charles and others. She also told her brother he had to stay close for the next couple days because she knew that she was going to be seeing Charles on the 11th when he came over to pick up their son, JJ, to take him to school. She told him, it's all coming to a head this week. I will be like Nephi, I am told, and so will you. A few minutes after Lori had texted Alex that message on July 9th that they were going to be like Nephi, Alex called his sister Lori, and they talked for over 56 minutes, planning how they were going to get rid of Charles. Alex would stay close with his gun, and he and Lori would be like Nephi. July 10th of 2019 is a day before Charles was killed. We know from text messages that by 7:18 p.m., Alex was already at Lori's house. He brought a garbage bag with some clothes and an orange duffel bag with his .45 caliber handgun and two extra magazines of ammunition. He was prepared. We also know that the evening of July 10th, Charles sent a message to Lori letting her know that he would be over at 7:30 a.m. the next day to pick up JJ, to take him to school. Lori and Alex knew exactly when this murder would happen and where it would happen. They just had to make sure that Charles stayed in the house. You'll hear that on the evening of July 10th, Charles spent his last night alive on a date. He had been on several dating apps and appeared to be moving on. You will hear from his date, Nancy Jo, that she and Charles had met on an LDS dating site a few days before. You will hear that she had talked to him and texted him for hours. Sometimes they would talk for 3 hours on the phone. Nancy Jo will tell you that Charles told her about everything of his relationship, his wife's beliefs, everything that was going on. And he had told her about this change to the beneficiary of his life insurance. She will tell you it sounded like a lot of drama, but she still was interested and wanted to meet this person, and so they met that evening for dinner. She'll tell you that she understood on the 11th that Charles would be picking up his son, that he was actually going to meet a realtor about finding a place to rent here so he could be closer to JJ, and that he was going to try to get in touch with Adam to meet up. And then they were supposed to meet later in the day. She will also tell you that she actually told Charles, kind of joking, but in a way to end the drama, why don't you just tell Lori that you changed the life insurance policy so she knows it's not her? Nancy Jo will tell you the next day, she texted Charles, She called him, and she actually thought he had ghosted her. She didn't know. He was dead. Until a few months later when she saw something on the news, a photo of him, and actually learned that he had been killed on July 11th. So let's talk about July 11th. That morning, Lori Vallow was up early and she was texting with Chad Daybell. You'll learn that we do not have those text messages. They were not saved in the iCloud, but we have them from the phone records. Alex was already at Lori's house with his gun, and everyone knew that Charles was a punctual person and would be there around 7:30 to pick up JJ so he could get to school. You're going to learn that, like many people, Charles had left his GPS data locating service on his phone. So that means when his phone is moving around, it was constantly documenting with GPS the location of the phone. During this trial, you're actually going to see this data mapped out. You'll be able to see Charles come to the house, and then you're going to see his phone leave with the defendant and what she does all day with it. What we know is that Charles arrived at Lori's house at about 7:35. He texted Adam Cox and told him that Alex, or Al, is here. You'll see from photos that Alex's truck was parked in the driveway. Adam responded, "Really, I wonder why he never called me back." Charles didn't respond to that. Adam then texted, "They're planning something." And Charles responded, "Absolutely." Adam told Charles, "I was supposed to spend the night at his house last night. She probably blocked that." Charles told Adam, "What you do is up to you." Adam then told Charles he was going to reach out to Alex and ask him to come get him and see what Alex would do. And in fact, he did text his brother. You'll learn that Charles read that text message from Adam, but he didn't respond. Adam sent one more text message to Charles at 7:49 a.m. on July 11th. He told him that he and his son were going to go play basketball at 8 p.m. to look for a specific church leader who was usually there and have a conversation with him. Charles Vallow never read that message, but you will learn that Lori and Alex did. Charles went to the front door of 5531 South Four Peaks Place, a house that he had rented for his wife, Lori Vallow, house that he paid for. Charles would have had to knock on the door, alerting Lori and Alex that he was there. He got JJ, put him out in the car. And then Lori Vallow created the reason to keep Charles from just leaving with JJ. Lori Vallow wanted to stop this intervention. Lori Vallow wanted to stop Charles and Adam from trying to take her Temple Recommend away. Lori Vallow, who wanted to be Lori Daybell. And Lori Vallow, who wanted Charles's money. So Lori took Charles's cell phone. And she refused to give it back. Lori Vallow, or Lori Daybell, whatever name you want to call her by, is why Charles didn't just leave with JJ that morning. Lori Vallow is why Alex was able to shoot Charles. Lori Vallow is why Charles is dead. So I want to tell you a little bit about the scene, this house, so you can understand what's happening here. When you walk in the front door, there's a big room. It was empty, no furniture. There were mirrors on two of the walls, windows on a third wall, and the fourth wall had doorways going into the kitchen and a hallway off to the bedroom.
I'm sure Lori's going to blow her away with her opening statement.
Yes. Oh, sure.
Where Charles Vallow was killed. This is where Alex Cox shot him two times. The first shot to Charles Vallow was to his chest. It exited out his back. Charles Vallow fell to the ground. He put his left hand to this wound, and blood transferred onto it. You will hear from the medical examiner that this shot went through his heart, and that a person can take seconds to up to 2 minutes to die from that type of wound. You will hear that a person can still talk and move after they're shot in the heart. And we know Charles was able to move since he put his dominant left hand on his chest and transferred that blood to his hand. You will see that. As Charles lay on the floor of 5531 South Fort Peace Place, Alex Cox stood at his feet and fired a second shot. That shot entered his abdomen and it exited his left shoulder. The angle was significantly upward. Dr. Bumgardner, who is the medical examiner, will tell you that this wound was short. You will learn that short means that there was something hard behind that wound. So when the bullet exited, it caused a different tearing pattern than the other wound that exited Charles's back. It is this short wound, this exit on Charles's left shoulder, that shows us that there was nothing accidental about this second shot. You will learn from the cell phone that at 7:49, Lori left Charles's house, or left her house with Charles's cell phone, his wallet, his rental car, and JJ and Tylee. She drove to Burger King, Walgreens, dropped JJ off at school, before she and her daughter, Tylee, drove back to the house. During this time, while Lori is driving around in Charles's car, his phone, she spoke with her brother, Alex, twice. The first call was at 7:52 a.m., 3 minutes after she left. The second call was at 8:06 a.m., 17 minutes after she left. You will hear that when Alex and Lori are talking, neither of them had called 911 yet. In fact, you will hear that Alex didn't call 911 until 47 minutes after Lori left. Charles Vallow lay dead on the floor of that house for 47 minutes before he called 911. During this 47 minutes, Alex began staging the scene and making mistakes. You're going to learn that the police found a bat that was located on the right side of Charles to the north of his head. Like he had been holding it, and when he was shot and fell, it dropped, it rolled up against one of the walls that had mirrors on it. What you're going to learn that is Alex forgot that Charles was left-handed. In fact, you're going to learn that Charles was a semi-professional baseball player. He pitched and he batted left-handed. So that bat was on the wrong side. Next, you're going to hear about an injury to Alex himself. Lori had told police that Charles hit Alex in the head with this bat before Alex shot Charles. Classic self-defense. But in all cases, we must look at the physical evidence because it doesn't lie. And the physical evidence doesn't have a bias or a memory loss. Sometimes it's the lack of physical evidence that doesn't lie. So again, we know that this room where Charles was shot had no furniture.
Did they have the bat?
Two walls.
A good question.
You learn that although Lori claimed that Charles hit Alex with that bat and then Alex shot him in self-defense. But Alex's gun had no blood transferred on it. Alex was allegedly struck in the head with a bat by a semi-professional baseball player. Doesn't go unconscious, and he never touches that injury. Pulls out a gun, is able to shoot this man twice, and then he takes the gun down a hallway and puts it into a room. Never apparently touching his head or this wound. And again, Lori says that Alex was hit with the bat in this room by Charles. But again, what we don't see is any blood on the floor. Charles strikes Alex in the head with a bat. They're grappling on the ground.
You think Lori will call Alex as a witness through a Ouija board or something?
Probably. She may have asked.
She'll summon him.
Yeah.
There's not a drop of blood going down the hallway to where Alex put the gun. There's not a drop of blood in the room where Alex put that gun. There's not a drop of blood on the floor in the kitchen where Alex went to go wash his hands. There are no towels, sheets, clothing, napkins with blood on them where Alex was holding his head and trying to stop this bleeding from this injury. You will see on body-worn camera, Alex Cox, who's on with 911, come out of the house. He will have a phone in one hand and his other hand up, and you will notice that he actually has a pair of sunglasses resting on the top of his head. You will see at some point, Alex sits down, and they ask him to move to another location. They talk to him for a while, and then you'll see him eventually touch his head a few times, and then he obtains a napkin or towel, something. And you'll see him at times rubbing his head, patting it. That is the only bloody item you will see. Those sunglasses on Alex's head. He is struck in the head by a baseball player while grappling on the ground.
It's amazing this was never investigated as a murder to begin with.
Right,
away
right.
This gun, deals with his injury, and yet those sunglasses are still right there on the top of his head. No blood on the floors, no blood on the gun, no damage to the mirrors, bat on the wrong side, a lack of physical evidence to help support this self-defense claim. Next, trajectory. The medical examiner will talk to you about the trajectory through Charles's body. The detectives are going to talk to you about the trajectory through the room. Dr. Baumgartner will tell you that the trajectory of that first shot to Charles, the one that went through his chest, through his heart, and out his back, was front to back and slightly downward. It will be less than an inch downward. The detectives will tell you that the bullet from that shot, actually, as it exited Charles's back, ended up across the room in the baseboard. They pulled it out and recovered it. Both of them will say that this shot is consistent with Charles being standing upright with a person in front of him. The gun could be slightly down, or his hand could, to cause that little bit of downward angle. Dr. Baumgartner will tell you that that second shot that entered Charles's abdomen and exited his left shoulder, that the trajectory of that shot was front to back and significantly upward, 13 inches upward. Dr. Baumgartner is also the one who will tell you about that short wound. What you will hear from the detectives, though, is that when they found Charles on the ground, off to the side of his left shoulder was the other bullet. On the ground, not embedded. They'll also tell you that when they finally moved Charles, they took his body away, they cleaned up the blood on the ground. and they noticed a defect in the flooring, in the wood, consistent with a bullet striking the ground. That defect was located where Charles's left shoulder had been. You will hear that both Dr. Baumgartner and the detectives found the trajectory. The wounds were consistent with Charles laying on the ground, Alex being at his feet when that second shot was fired. The physical evidence does not lie. Charles was on the ground when Alex Cox fired that second shot. The injuries to Charles, the location of the bullet strikes, the trajectory of the injuries both in Charles and in the house, all show this was not self-defense. This was a staged murder scene. I told you that Lori Vallow left the house at 7:49 a.m., and we know this because of Charles Vallow's cell phone. The 911 call was placed at 8:36 a.m., 47 minutes later. The police arrived at 5531 South Four Peaks Place at about 8:40, 8:41 a.m. Lori Vallow and her daughter Tylee returned to the house at 8:48 a.m. When the police first contacted Lori Vallow, they thought she had no idea that her husband was dead, that he'd been shot and killed. Initially, you will see body cam footage of an officer going up and just getting her information. Lori doesn't ask, why are all these police here? Why is there a fire truck here? Why is my brother sitting on the ground over there? Or is he okay? Instead, she comments about her neighbors. You'll learn that the police then pulled her aside to do what they call a death notification, to let her know that her husband was dead. Only to their surprise, she told them she knew she was there. So at this point, the police knew they needed to take her to the police station and question her. You'll learn that Lori Vallow was interviewed by the police. She was treated very kindly. The police asked her what happened. Lori Vallow told the police that she took Charles's cell phone. She admitted that she was the reason that Charles didn't just leave and take JJ to school. She told police in no uncertain terms that Charles was demanding his phone back, and she refused to give it back. She told the police that even as Charles screamed at her for his phone, she walked away from him, wouldn't give it to him. No matter what happened or what Charles said or did, she would not give his phone back to him. Lori told police that her daughter, Tylee, came out of the room during the screaming with a bat, that Charles took it away from Tylee, and Tylee fell on the ground, and she told Tylee to go out to the car with JJ. She still didn't return the phone. She told police that Alex came out, that he and Charles got into this scuffle with the bat, that Charles hit him in the head with the bat. She still didn't give Charles back the phone. What she did instead was take his phone and go around that wall into the kitchen. Left the situation. Time to let brother Alex be Nephi. While she's in the kitchen, she said she heard the gunshot, came out, saw Charles on the ground, and her brother standing at Charles's feet. Then she told the police she left. You'll learn that the police actually had no idea that Lori still had Charles's phone. Even when they're interviewing her, she still had it. Police are processing the house, looking for it. Where is it? I can't find it. Later in the afternoon, you'll hear that the police actually called Lori and Alex and asked them to come back to the scene. And when Lori arrived, they told her they couldn't find Charles's phone. And she told the detective that she found the phone in the car. Found it in the car. She gave Charles's phone to Detective Enplan and then provided her with Charles's PIN number to get into the phone. You'll learn that after those interviews in the morning, Lori and Alex went back to Alex's house in Santan. And there they went through Charles's phone. You'll learn that Alex actually took photos of some of the messages between Charles and Adam, including Adam's flight reservations. And he later sent those to his sister, Lori. July 11th. Lori didn't tell any of Charles's family he was dead. She didn't tell Adam that Charles was dead. She certainly knows they had been talking. The next day, Lori texted Charles's sons from his prior marriage and told them, "Your dad is dead." Charles's sons reached out to their Aunt Kay about this, and you'll learn that Kay and her husband had to Google this, see if it was true. They found out that Charles had been shot. So what about the money, that life insurance policy? Charles Vallow had $1 million life insurance policy. When he got it, his wife, Lori Vallow, was the beneficiary. We know that Charles died on a Thursday, July 11th. That next Monday, July 15th, Lori Vallow called Banner Life Insurance. The call was recorded and you'll hear it. She told the agent that Charles had been accidentally shot.
Oops.
It's an accident.
And
that it's going to be a great insurance company call. I'd love to hear that.
Both of those statements are not correct. There was nothing accidental about that shooting, and she was not the beneficiary. 3 days later, on July 18th, Lori Vallow learned that she was not the beneficiary. Banner Life Insurance could not and would not tell her who Charles had changed it to.
Mm-mm.
But Lori was angry about it. And you're going to learn that on July 18th of 2019, there's another very important text message in this case. The first one on July 9th, between Lori and Alex, when they discuss being like Nephi. And on July 18th, 7 days after Lori and Alex killed Charles and Lori learned she is not getting $1 million life insurance policy, she sends a message to Chad Daybell. Quote, "So I talked to the insurance company. He changed it in March. So it was probably Ned before we got rid of him."
Probably.
You can't tell me who, of course, but it's done.
Ned.
I'll still get $4,000 a month from SS.
Always
in this
Ned.
Text message, Lori tells Chad that it was probably Ned, that evil spirit inhabiting Charles's body, that changed the life insurance policy.
Of course.
Before they got rid of him. Before Ned. They killed him.
Sounds legit.
After Lori found out that she was not the beneficiary, she was so angry that she actually went through Charles's laptop, found the beneficiary change form, sent photos of that to Chad. She also confronted Kay about it. The $1 million she had expected to get was gone. But as Lori told Chad on the 18th, she was still going to get money from the death of Charles. Lori knew already that a month before going to see Social Security, how much money she would get for JJ and for herself as a caregiver as a result of Charles being killed. $4,000 a month. Ladies and gentlemen, the evidence in this case is going to show you that Lori Vallow, Daybell, conspired with her brother, Alex Cox, to kill her husband, Charles Vallow. When Charles let Lori know he was coming into town, she quickly got the pieces into place. Alex came to her house with a gun. Lori created the way to keep Charles inside the house so that Alex and she could be like Nephi, to kill Charles Vallow to better at least her life, so she could be with Chad and she could live off that life insurance policy. As we go through this trial, you will see photos of Charles's injury, photos of the crime scene, and hear testimony that will prove that this was not self-defense. As we go through this trial, you'll be provided with phone calls, emails, text messages, and hear testimony that lays out the motive for this murder.
How long until she perjures herself?
Oh, I'm given 5 minutes.
You will see text messages and hear from people who Lori trusted and who were later pushed away. People who really don't want to be part of this trial, but were pulled into it by this defendant and her desire to get rid of Charles to be with Chad. People who heard Lori for months saying Charles was gone, possessed. People who will establish that this murder was premeditated. You will hear text messages from July 9th by Lori to her brother, Alex Cox, that he had to stay near her, that it was all coming to a head, and she would be like Nephi, and so would he. A justified killing, just like the prophet. And later, the text message to Chad, where she told him that Charles changed the life insurance policy before they got rid of Ned. A confession by Lori of how religion and money were twisted to justify Charles's murder. At the end of this trial, the state will come to you and ask you to hold the defendant responsible for the death of Charles Vallow and find her guilty of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Thank you.
Wow.
Well, I'm sure Lori is going to bring it.
All right. Will the defendant be giving an opening statement? Okay, because of the lunch hour, your opening statement will start after lunch. I'm going to excuse the jury for lunch. I'm going to ask juror three to stay back. I need to talk to you about something. Please remember the admonition, jurors. We'll see you. Let's start. Everyone be back in the jury room about 1:20 p.m. and we'll resume at 1:30. Thank you.
So there you go. Our next segment, we're going to listen to Lori. We're going to see what Lori brings to the table. Any predictions?
Do I have time to get popcorn? I have some in the kitchen. Yeah, I have some Smart Pop in the kitchen.
I like that idea. I might do the same or something. So
okay. Yeah, get some coffee, some popcorn. Yep. You know,
I don't think she's gonna go super long. I mean, I don't know, but let me Lori. No, she doesn't go very long. No, then they immediately are going into looks like witnesses and stuff. So, it'll be short but sweet, I'm sure. So this will be it's gonna be exciting. All right. So our next segment, make sure to get there and check it out, whether on the podcast or on YouTube. That's coming up next.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed, only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. The mansion was pristine, gleaming marble floors, priceless art, not a speck of dust in sight. But beneath all that luxury, secrets, dark ones, the kind that send a chill down your spine when you realize someone's watching. And the housekeeper, she saw everything. The late-night visitors, the missing jewelry, the glass of wine that was only half-finished before she disappeared. Some say the husband was heartbroken. Others say he was just waiting for the insurance check to clear. But if she had just been prepared, if she had just known the patterns of these kinds of crimes, if she had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where she could listen to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, ad-free, and before everyone else, she could have gotten out. Instead, well, let's just say her final paycheck is still sitting in the mailroom. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.